adventure. Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
All righty, here we are on this Monday night edition of the program. And, well, busy week ahead. We have some interesting guests. And one thing I thought we would do is we haven't discussed really in a couple of weeks since we have been preoccupied with the issue of the invasion USA. And now that the closure on debate has failed temporarily, we thought we would once again get back on track with the so-called hate speech, hate crimes bill. Because it really is a matter of speech as well as crimes, despite what some people would have you believe. And lo and behold, in the newspapers across America this weekend, a syndicated column by an individual, Mr. Charles Haynes, who calls himself a First Amendment scholar at the organization First Amendment Center, wrote a column. And in the column, it is entitled, in my paper, "Would Federal Hate Crime Law Threaten Religious Freedom?" Now, he doesn't really answer it directly, but in the last paragraph, he does sort of dispel any notion that it is likely to result in prosecution of Americans for speech and the like. So I emailed him, and I invited him to appear on the program. And I invited him to appear with Ted Pike of TruthTellers.org, and he declined. He just said that maybe it would be better to try to have someone from one of the groups that are promoting it. So I thanked him very much, and I contacted Ted Pike, and we firmed it up. We said, Ted, if he doesn't want to come on to discuss his particular slant on this legislation, which really there is quite an evident slant, I think, then that's fine. You know, we have tried before to get someone from the ADL to appear on the program, and, you know, they won't touch me with a 10-foot pole. They won't touch the program with a 10-foot pole. And, you know, I pride myself on being quite fair and quite, able to conduct a balanced program, and yet they will not, because I think that more often than not, they know that if they appear, they may do themselves more harm than good. So here we are tonight with Ted Pike doing a solo appearance on the broadcast on the hate crimes bill. Ted will be with us tonight to answer point by point the questions that Mr. Haynes has raised on the subject that he states these are the positions from both sides, naysayers and yaysayers. So we'll discuss them, and then we'll discuss his conclusion and see what you think and what needs to be done, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be right back with Ted Pike. Okay, we're back now. Let's see if we can make that connection with Ted Pike of TruthTellers.org. Do we have him?
Yes, I'm here, Rick.
I gather that since I alerted you to the column that had been syndicated by Haynes and his center across the United States in newspapers, that you did have a chance to go to his site and look it up, right?
Yes, I do. I did. I've gone through it pretty thoroughly. I think we have some real talking points here, some misapprehensions and disinformation even that's coming from him.
Yes, and unfortunately, that's the problem when casual readers look at an article like that and get a false impression of what the bill is all about, how extensive it may or may not be. But he does say in the opening paragraph, as you know, he says the May 3rd, 2007 will go down in history as either a civil rights milestone or a day of infamy, depending on which side of the culture war you're on. That's the day the U.S. House voted 236 to 180 to pass H.R. 1592. That's the hate bill, which is titled, as you know, the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2007. And he does say it extends the definition of hate crimes to include violent attacks on people because of sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. And he takes the pros and the cons, and in the first instance where he refers to Christian conservatives and other groups condemning the legislation, he said it ranges from apoplectic to apocalyptic, their opposition. And under the cover of fighting so-called hate crimes, writes Lou Shelton of Traditional Values Coalition, the bill will be used to fund anti-Christian, pro-homosexual, drag queen materials for children and divert scarce federal resources away from fighting Islamic terrorism, unquote. Now, evangelical leader Chuck Colson is quoted as warning the bill's intent is to shut down freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of thought. And its passage would strike at the very heart of our democracy. The Civil Rights Coalition, he claims, and the Christian right organizations could not have more divergent views on the subject. I think that goes without saying. But now here's what he says, okay, about proponents. He says that proponents claim violent attacks on people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity are a widespread problem affecting not only the victims, but also an entire community of people and their families, and it urgently requires federal intervention. Now, right there, that statement is not totally false, and yet it reeks of images of whole groups, whole people as victims. Now, when you say an entire group could be a victim of hate, and only one individual in that group is beaten up or physically assaulted, then what other possible definition could you apply to a group except some kind of non-physical, non-threatening attack, i.e. verbal, mental anguish, and so forth, Ted? See, that right there raises the first flag, I think.
Yes. Well, the truth is that this language, this point of view, is coming straight from the hate bill. They say that hate crimes, as this says, do not simply localize one victim, but they radiate out through whole communities. Now, This may have been true 100 years ago, 150 years ago, when the Ku Klux Klan was lynching blacks. This panic and this fear may have spread throughout regions of the South and so on, and perhaps that was what the KKK had in mind, was to keep the blacks under subjection and so on.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is that when a 13-year-old, a bunch of junior high school students on a lark go and they spray KKK on the walls of the schoolyard, whatever, that does not send shock waves and panic throughout the suburban community of that junior high school. This is an illusion. This is a fantasy on the part of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, who has authored this kind of reasoning.
Yeah.
And again, here they're saying this is urgently requiring federal intervention. Mm-hmm. Well, where's the evidence for that? Where is the evidence that the states are not enforcing all of their laws against vandalism, assault?
Well, they don't produce any, and neither does he, to buttress the argument whatsoever.
That's so. Right. And in the hate crimes flyer that I have at truthtellers.org, our website, I point out that the actual incidence of so-called hate crimes, and even this is exaggerated, wildly exaggerated, is only about 1/20 of 1% of all crimes that are committed in the United States annually, according to the FBI's Uniform Crime Report.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a crime problem of 1/20 of 1%, that is not an epidemic of hate, a national crisis, which is urgently requiring federal intervention.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is a trumped up a kind of a problem, a solution in search of a problem.
Well,
this is
indeed.
Indeed,
yeah. Though, if you go to the ADL's website in recent weeks, they have finally come out of the closet on this one, and they have actually taken the lead, whereas before it was a stealth issue to them when it looked like maybe they were going to get it to breeze through Congress, as they have been hoping in the last several years. Now that the opposition has grown, they've come out, they've identified with it, and that's almost identical to the language that they have used. So Haynes is basically reporting and regurgitating the language that the ADL uses without accrediting it to the ADL.
That's right. This is hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
There is no substance here. This legislation is redundant.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that there are more than enough provisions in state law for every kind of offense, including bias-motivated violence, assault, and so on. And there is no evidence that the states are failing or they are remiss and so on. Now, it may have been in the Reconstructionist days after the Civil War that the laggard Southern politicians were remiss in enforcing federal protections against blacks and ex-slaves and so on. But the language out of this hate bill is rather archaic. The hate bill talks about bias and bias-motivated violence in the states today as an evidence of continued slavery in the states and so on. All of this is just a pretext, a sham, in order to provide some kind of legal pretext for federal involvement in states' rights and law enforcement in an unprecedented way. You see, what this federal hate bill basically wants to do is to break down all states' rights and law enforcement so that the federal government can come in anytime
right.
they want to. They can make an indictment. They can push aside the local attorney generals and Justice Department and get into hate crimes, persecution, especially of Christians, big time on the state level.
Well, that's interesting because that is the, as he says, probably the source of the hottest debate is the issue that Chuck Colson raised. He says, will this law lead to restrictions on religious freedom and free speech, or that of religious people who oppose homosexuality? To the bill's supporters, he said the answer is an emphatic no. To underscore this point, the authors amended the bill to make clear it wouldn't prohibit what the First Amendment protects, so says Mr. Haynes. Now, he says Christian conservatives strongly disagree, arguing that hate crimes laws in Europe and Canada are used to intimidate Christian pastors who preach against homosexuality. It is worth noting, he says, that the case most often cited, the conviction of the Reverend Eke Green in Sweden, ended with his acquittal by the Swedish Supreme Court in 2005. However, much or little religious speech is chilled abroad. That's what he contends. The U.S. isn't Europe or Canada. Now, let's stop right there. Do you agree with that statement that he's made?
Well, what he's trying to do here is to start to build his own case. In the first part of this article, he's giving kind of back and forth what the controversy is about. And then he's beginning to state that he doesn't think that this is such a big problem.
Exactly.
Because
he's taking a stand. Right.
Yeah. According to him, these cases all dwindle out. They can't be perpetuated to a real conviction, especially under Supreme Courts of Sweden or Canada or whatever. Now, this is not the truth. He is probably quite ignorant. I'll be charitable. Mr. Haynes is probably quite ignorant of all of the cases in Canada that have gone forward to conviction. And,
well, I don't know now, Ted, because he has in the past, in a column not too many months ago, brought up that very issue pertaining not just to Canada but to Europe and the Holocaust-denying laws.
Uh-huh.
So he has to be up to speed on a lot of that, knowing that there, in fact, is where the problem lies. We'll be right back. Ted Pike, stay where you are, truthtellers.org. Rick Adams, another exciting program of Uncensored Radio Free America, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Rick Adams is back.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio.
All right, we're back now with Ted Pike, www.truthtellers.org. And Ted, of course, you were not mentioned at all in this column, and you, I know, are probably not maybe in the same league with Focus on the Family or some of the other evangelical groups, but then again, you have made you have probably done more than any of these other groups to alert the nation to the threat that's posed by this legislation. So anyway, he goes on and he mentions the Swedish case, and he does not mention in this column anything at all that I see about the Holocaust denial cases where people have been hauled before courts and convicted, by the way. No conviction overturned in Europe, for instance, and in Canada. So he avoids mentioning that and only selectively mentions the Swedish pastor and others that may have met with acquittal, including the Philadelphia 12. So I think that in itself is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, he's not facing into the whole reality here. He's giving the impression that we really don't have to worry that even though some overzealous prosecutor may indict somebody under hate crimes laws, a state or federal, nevertheless, he says, our freedom of speech is pretty much guaranteed by the First Amendment. We don't have anything to worry about because it'll all be thrown out. Now, that's not the case. The truth is, as you mentioned, Ernst Zundel was finally convicted and is spending, what is it, 4 to 6 years in a German prison now for doing nothing but questioning the accuracy of the 6 million figure.
Of the numbers,
Also, David Irving spent more than a year in an Austrian prison. Now, we're talking about hate crimes laws. We're talking about ADL-inspired hate crimes laws in all of these European countries.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Jermar Rudolph, I understand, is awaiting trial. Others there, quite a number of others are being either indicted or awaiting trial and so on. And not only that, but up in Canada, we have a long list of many free thinkers and especially Christians who have been indicted under these laws, and if they actually haven't been found guilty, they certainly have been devastated by bankrupting costs. There's Scott Brocky paid $170,000 bankrupting himself in Toronto because as a Christian he refused to print homosexual stationery. There's Hugh Owens, who I believe had to fork out $6,000 up in Saskatchewan for putting 3 Bible verses in the local newspaper critical of homosexuality. He was convicted. Bill Watcott, I forget which province he is in, but I talked to him on the phone. He described how he is under a $35,000 fine now for 2 charges of disseminating literature, which he created, just several tracts critical of homosexuality. And then my friend Malcolm Ross earlier, he had lost his job as a teacher, was found guilty for criticizing the Holocaust and so on. And there are quite a few others. Of course, Doug Collins up in D.C., he spent a couple $100,000 trying to defend himself because he questioned the sacred 6 million figure. And others, there's Bishop Henry in Calgary who was censored and threatened with fines and imprisonment just for going against abortion. On and on and on. It's a litany, a travesty, what hate crimes have done to Canada. But according to this man, Haynes, there doesn't seem to be any big problem. And what he says here is very, very shallow. He basically says that we don't have anything to fear because the record of hate crimes enforcement during the last decade or so, both under 45 state hate laws and the federal hate law, which was passed in 1968, shows that there haven't been any significant indictments leading to convictions here in the United States. Well, I really have to take issue with that because the fact of the matter is that this federal hate law, which was passed in 1968, it's Title 18, it was hamstrung. It was never allowed to be enforced because the federal government simply didn't have the kind of jurisdiction to come down into states' rights in law enforcement that they're wanting out of the present federal hate bill.
Exactly.
So to say, you know, it never indicted and never convicted anybody is beside the point, because it didn't have that power. And the big federal hate bill, which is now before the Senate Judiciary, will give it power to do that kind of indictment.
And therefore set a new precedent, absolutely.
That's
so
right.
So that's rather shallow, as you point out. And he says, however, much or little religious speech is chilled abroad. The U.S. is in Europe or Canada. The First Amendment protects all kinds of controversial speech for and against homosexuality, religious and otherwise. Now, that is the general statement that is being made. Yet, as you've just pointed out, in fact, what we saw in Philadelphia was a classic example of an ADL prosecutor, Lynn Abrams, who absolutely, positively violated the U.S. Constitution with seeming impunity in arresting the Philadelphia 12. And were it not for the judge intervening, they'd still be in jail today.
Well, we'll come back to
all
that.
All right, we'll pick up on that point, and we'll take calls. Those of you on the line, stay with us. Ted Pike, truthtellers.org, The Hate Bill, Rick Adams. We'll be right back with more. Okay, 1-800-313-9443. Questions or comments about the column we're talking about by Charles Haynes of the First Amendment Committee, or I think it's the First Amendment Center in Virginia. In any event, Ted, we were just talking about these cases, and I had to stop for the break. Continue with what you were explaining about the hate bill.
Yeah, well, I was on a scene there several years ago.
Right.
Not in Philadelphia, but I had been fighting really hard against the federal hate bill and been doing a lot of talk radio all summer long. It had, mm-hmm. it had passed overwhelmingly in the Senate that
right.
spring. I was very concerned about it passing. And we were able to defeat the hate bill. That is, I and many, many talk show hosts and listeners to talk radio, we defeated the hate bill in October of that year. It was October 8th, which mm-hmm. is a Friday, and the ADL was so angry that the religious right had again snatched a victory from them in the Senate. It was conference between the House and the Senate that they lashed out. Lynn Abraham lashed out against these 11 Christians who were, of course, doing nothing more than singing a hymn and holding up signs, biblical verses against the homosexuality. Now, you might think an event as blatant and outrageous as that, which they were incarcerated for 21 hours in the Justice Department jail, they were in danger of having spending 47 years in prison under 7 arrest charges and $90,000 fines each. You'd have thought that would make the headlines, at least in Philadelphia. Do you realize it was three months before there was an even article on that in the Philadelphia papers?
Mm-hmm.
And do you realize it was 3 months before even Pat Robertson's organization, Christian Coalition, even took notice of what happened in Philadelphia? And during that time, the notices, the alerts from even the largest Christian conservative organizations were very few, very far between, and so on. Now, Mr. Haynes thinks, you know, well, it's just inevitable that these cases will be thrown out in the court of law. Well, Lynn Abraham is a seasoned veteran prosecutor. Mm-hmm. She didn't believe that. She thought she could do it, and she could use the corrupt Philadelphia and
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania
right.
appeal system to drive that through and get a conviction against those Christians under the ADL's Pennsylvania hate law. The fact of the matter is, just as with A.T. Green in Sweden, we were able to make such a ruckus, such an international ruckus, that we brought in thousands of calls and emails all around the world into the corrupted justice system, the district attorney's office there in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
demanding that those Christians be let go.
Yeah.
So there is nothing inevitable about an acquittal under these hate crimes laws. They are meant to, if they can't actually convict you, they're meant to exhaust you. exhaust the Christians financially and emotionally in the courts, you see, hamstring. And not only that, but to scare other Christians, intimidate them, and cause a chill on free speech so none of us will stick up our heads and get into their shooting gallery by criticizing homosexuality.
Exactly. And what has taken place the rest of the European and Canadian worlds, and even Australia, there have been attempts to silence speech based on hate motivation, bias motivation against a group. And someone has to make a decision when you start punishing speech. And granted that here in America, we at least in theory still have the Constitution on paper, but it doesn't take more than a dissenting judge to turn things around. And ultimately, for the Supreme Court, a Justice Ginsburg, for instance, to decide that religious speech is not protected speech when it opposes homosexual activity. You know?
Well,
I mean, it's that simple.
That's exactly right. Now, you see, what he is giving the impression of in this article
mm-hmm.
is that the jots and tittles and the minutia of the law will always protect us from anything bad coming out of the federal hate bill. Well, the truth of the matter is, as we saw with Lynn Abraham and many other instances, when these ADL lackeys want to go after somebody and make an indictment, they really don't care what the law says. They say, we'll go ahead and arrest and indict, and then it's up to you. We'll let the taxpayers fund our indictment and prosecution of you,
mm-hmm.
and you, out of your meager funds, will have to defend yourself in the courts against us. Now, what happens, you see, is there are certain checks and balances in hate crimes laws. For example, under the Pennsylvania hate crimes law, what it says is you've got to have bias motivation on one hand, and certainly the Philadelphia 11 had bias against homosexuality. They were guilty in that half of the definition. But they also, the law also says you have to violate the law. There must be a criminal offense. Now, that's what Lynn Abraham and the city of Philadelphia was unable to sustain
mm-hmm.
against these Christians.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't, they knew they couldn't do that, that didn't keep them from going ahead and making use of that perverse law in the first place.
Right.
You know, there's a case right now in Illinois, which is an example of this. There was a young woman, I should say a teenager, a girl in her 15 or 16 years old in Illinois public schools, and she wanted to humiliate a couple of her boyfriends or ex-boyfriends or something.
Mm-hmm.
So she got a couple of pictures of both of them and put them together and Xeroxed it as if they were kissing. And then she put a title on it that says, God Hates Fags, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then she, just as a joke, she took this and she started spreading around and was able to hand out about 40 of these Xerox copies on campus there in Illinois recently. And this, of course, created a tremendous howl of protest when the thought crimes police and the Illinois hate crimes unit found out what was going on. She was reported to the police. She was jailed, and she's been for several months now in jail as a hate criminal. This 16-year-old girl is a hate criminal.
Yes.
In Illinois. Now,
yeah.
But the truth of the matter is the Illinois law, like all of these state laws, has exactly the same kind of criteria, this formula. You've got to have bias on one hand, then you've got to have some criminal offense. Well, yes, she revealed bias, but what was her criminal offense in handing out these 40 Xerox copies? There was no criminal offense there. But the prosecutor for the state said this is a classic case of the kind of infraction which the Illinois ADL hate law was meant to address, you see. So what they're doing is they're leaping forward, going beyond the letter of the law, and Mr. Haynes should be aware of this tendency, both in Philadelphia, Illinois, and also, let me give you just one more example of a state hate crimes prosecution. About 4 or 5 years ago, a man and his wife were at a football game. It was hotly contested, and a black referee was booed by the crowd. He was very angry, and this man's wife, Mrs. Ray, snapped a picture of this black referee. He was outraged. She was a reporter for the local newspaper. He followed her. He grabbed her around the neck. He threw her to the ground, tore the camera off of her neck. And in an impulsive action, Mr. Ray, Lonnie Ray was his name, used the N-word against this black referee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a big hate crime in Idaho. Lonnie Ray is taken before the hate crimes tribunal, the court system, and he was facing 5 years in prison
mm-hmm.
for using the N-word. Okay.
Yep.
All right, okay, there's bias. Yeah, he was biased. In a moment of rage, seeing his wife thrown to the ground, he used the N-word. Okay, he's biased against blacks. If you want to grant them that. But where was the criminal offense? Again, there was no criminal offense. But that didn't stop the ADL hate law prosecutors of the state of Idaho from trying to put him away for 5 years. Now, these are the kind of anecdotes that Mr. Haynes should realize is that
mm-hmm.
this system, because it does not
mm-hmm.
have the kind of checks and balances which our Constitution provides in our Republican system of government, because it is a slippery slope, is going to lead to these kinds of abuses again and again. And liberal judges, sooner or later, are going to convict, and it's going to go on the books as legal precedent. Now, on the other hand, recently this spring, in committee in the House, these feisty Republicans were able to get the liberals to bend a little bit and put a provision in the hate bill that there would be nothing in that hate bill which would restrict our First Amendment rights. But on the other hand, you see, the whole idea of a bias-oriented justice system running parallel to our traditional system of Anglo-Saxon law is in competition to free speech right there, because it,
mm-hmm.
it gives over to these judges, federal and local, the right to make law and extend the hate crimes law away from just away from physical violence, but also over to verbal violence against homosexuals, ultimately leading to a speech crimes law rather than just a physical bias-motivated law.
Yes, and that he also, unfortunately, makes the focus of his article is the issue of the homosexual orientation as the only or most exclusive domain, when in fact, as you point out, it's also blacks and it's also other, quote, designated minorities, and, of course, speech affecting issues pertaining to the Holocaust. So he leaves all of that out, makes it sound almost one-dimensional, and that's the genesis of part of the problem with his commentary or his purported expose on the issue. Let's take a call, 800-313-9443. We're talking with Ted Pike, who is of the website www.truthtellers.org. He and, of course, his niece, Harmony Grant, been very busy lately trying to galvanize your efforts to oppose this bill. And I think now you can understand why it's so important, with all of this misinformation, this almost disarming misinformation going across America, making it sound like a relatively innocuous piece of legislation. Now is the time to gear up for the battle in the days ahead. It could come up at any moment. Let's talk to Jim in Texas. Hello, Jim. You're on with Ted Pike.
Rick and Ted, talked to you before.
Good
Ted.
Evening.
I'm sure the whole purpose of Mr. Haynes' article was that he wanted to go after these three Jewish students in Tennessee, college students, who burned down 11 Baptist churches, and he wants to get them for hate crimes. I'm sure that's the whole impetus behind his article.
Oh, positively.
Absolutely, because if there's one thing these columnists do, is they want to go after the true culprits of the situation. Now, here we have three college students using thermite incendiary devices, burned down 11, I think it was 11, I could be wrong on the numbers, 9 or 11 or something like that. But anyhow, they burned down strictly Baptist churches, not black Baptist churches, but white Baptist churches. okay? And when the story first broke, if your listeners will remember, they were blaming the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazis and Adolf Hitler himself. Mm-hmm. And they were blaming anybody and everybody. When it was discovered there was three Jewish college students,
uh-huh.
all of a sudden it became, well, it was a college prank. It was three exuberant students who didn't really know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way hate crimes laws work. Anytime you leave anything up to the discretion of a prosecutor, then you've lost. Because what's happened in that? I haven't heard a thing on that case since it happened, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. I have heard not one word in the national press. As far as I know, these guys are vacationing in Israel. I don't know where they are. Nobody knows. You haven't heard anything.
You see what happened at Duke lacrosse with the players.
Absolutely.
That's another example of being applied in a one-sided fashion.
If it fits their agenda, they'll go after you like you were the worst thing that ever was. If it don't fit their agenda, we'll make a couple of excuses and you never hear anything about it again.
Mm-hmm. Ted, do you have any response to that?
Well, I did look into that case very, very thoroughly a year and a half or so ago,
uh-huh.
and I didn't find any compelling evidence that these three Jewish young men were actually incited by the ADL or actually doing it or have some kind of a background, an educational background. That's not to say they didn't, but I couldn't find any compelling evidence. On the other hand, the fact that they were Jewish seems to have played a predominant role in the media, quieting this down, quashing it, and so on. And we find that pattern everywhere.
Yeah.
If the homosexuals perform the most vile acts outrages against whites and whatever, we never hear about those things in the media, but let a homosexual become the victim of white homophobia or anger or whatever,
yes.
and they'll actually name the hate bill after
mm-hmm.
that homosexual. Certainly the David Ray hate bill and Matthew Shepard and
mm-hmm.
so on are examples of that. So again, this system of bias motivation as the criteria of guilt under the law is a very unstable one, because nobody knows exactly what bias is or whether it's good or bad or what intimidation is, and yet these are the central terms, the defining terms, which in this case in the federal hate bill entitle the federal government to come down and swoop down and take over law enforcement on the local level. So it's a very unstable, very subjective system of justice, which we could be unleashing on our republic if we allow this bill to get through the Senate.
It's what's called selective prosecution, where it's up to the prosecutor to say, well, this is a hate crime or that isn't, regardless of the circumstances. Now, these three individuals, they didn't burn down a synagogue or two and a Baptist church and a couple of Catholic churches and this or that. It was strictly white Baptist churches they burnt down. I mean, it's obvious to anybody what they were after, what they were doing. But do you hear about any hate crimes prosecutions? No. They don't even want to prosecute them for anything. They were exuberant college students who got carried away. Hello.
Are you trying to say, Jim, that they would be treated differently if they burned down 11 synagogues or 11 black churches?
Right. If it had been a KKK member to burn down 11 synagogues, I mean, the execution would have been too good for him, according to our national media. And we all know it. And that's the way the law
yes,
works.
Indeed.
That's why you cannot have something called hate crimes laws
well,
or selective
not only
prosecution.
That, but even the very nature of the laws. I mean, for instance, why should there be any law which presumes a motivation as part of the crime and exacts penalties for that motivation? That in itself should be and is unconstitutional as far as my reading of the Constitution is concerned.
And mine too, because who ever heard of a love crime?
Exactly. Thank you, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that. Ted Pike, my guest. We shall return. You got a question, a comment on the strategy here or on Mr. Haynes' column, you just dial us in, 800-313-9443. Rick Adams, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. We're back now with Ted Pike. We're discussing this column, which purports to discuss pros and cons of the hate bill that we've been talking about now for some years here on the air. And the number, by the way, for you to call your congressman, particularly your senator, because that's where it is now, in the United States Senate, as you had done with the amnesty bill, is 877-851-6437. Toll-free, 877-851-6437. Now, you may find the lines busy. There's been a lot of calls, obviously, going in. So the other number, the toll number, you wish to call your senator is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. And, Ted, I want you to stay with me a little bit because Mr. Haynes then goes on after making that statement that it isn't likely that religious or political speech would be affected in and of itself. He says, nevertheless, Christian conservatives claim H.R. 1592 would weaken that protection by potentially criminalizing speech against homosexuality. They argue, for example, that the law could be used to prosecute a minister who preaches a strong sermon condemning and depicting homosexuality in a negative way if someone in the news goes out and commits a hate crime against homosexuals. But unless the minister, he says, in a manner likely to incite imminent lawless action, directs people to commit violence, speech that isn't protected by the First Amendment now, it's difficult to see how this law would restrict what is said from the pulpit, however strongly stated. You see, now that is what you've already answered that, actually. But that claim is very disarming to people who are novices and who don't know the nature of this bill and how this legislation is almost identical to legislation that has been enacted since the 1970s in Canada, for instance, and how it's been applied.
That's right. What we have to remember is that this legislation before the Senate right now, S-1105, is actually amendments to a federal hate bill which was passed back in 1968. It's called Title 18 USC. And in Section 245, it says it is a federal crime to, by force or threat of force, intimidate or attempt to intimidate members of federally protected groups. Those would include homosexuals now. Now, that in itself is not bad this is proper that we shouldn't threaten to kill or threaten to harm people, even though we very vehemently disagree with their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But in Section 2 of Title 18, which is this civil rights bill passed in 1968 and is the foundation for the big federal hate bill now in Congress, it says that if anyone aids, abets, or induces someone to commit acts of threats of intimidation or violence against another person, then that person can also be indicted as a co-conspirator in a federal hate crime. Now, that's a very disturbing language there, because what it says is if a pastor teaches from the pulpit that God hates homosexuals or hates homosexuality, sometimes we have to ask if there's any difference. Certainly the Bible is very clear that the Lord hates the lying and deceitful man.
All right, we'll pick up on that. Stay with me in 1 minute. Take a quick break. Hour number 2 coming right up on the program with